and welcome to this ACE Oncocast. This podcast series is entitled Frequently Asked Questions on Clinical Practice in Urothelial Cancers. My name is Delith Eichermann, and I am delighted to be joined today by a few leading urothelial cancer experts. Dr. Francisco Real from the National Cancer Center in Madrid, Spain. Dr. Felix Guerrero from Hospital Universitario 12 de Octubre in Madrid, Spain, as well as Dr. Natalia Carballo and Dr. Enrique Grande, who are both from MD Anderson Cancer Center, Madrid. Dr. Real, how do you define muscle-invasive bladder cancer from a pathology perspective?
Well, again, from a pathologist's perspective, it's a morphological evidence that the tumor has invaded the muscularis propria. So this is a classification, non-muscle versus muscle-invasive bladder cancer, that is strictly defined by the involvement, the invasion of the, or the lack of invasion of the muscularis propria by the tumor. So it's very strictly a pathological definition.
What are the prognostic and predictive biomarkers in muscle-invasive bladder cancer, and what is the value of molecular subtypes?
The classical prognostic factors in muscle-invasive bladder cancers are those related to the invasion of the muscle, the invasion of the lymph nodes, and obviously the presence of metastatic disease. However, in the last few years, there have been major developments trying to implement the use of molecular markers that could assist in the establishment of prognosis. In this regard, both the TCGA and the consensus classification of bladder cancer that was agreed by a large number of members of the clinical and biological community working on bladder cancer has established the existence of six molecular subtypes. Three of them are luminal subtypes, which are related to the urothelial identity of the tumors: luminal papillary, luminal non-specified, and luminal unstable. Then we have the stromal-rich tumors, which are defined by the presence of a very stroma-rich stroma, as indicated by its name. We have the basal squamous cancers, which are characterized by the presence of basal features similar to those of the basal layer of the urothelium, and the neuroendocrine. The last one, the neuroendocrine, are the less frequent tumor type, being present only in 3 to 5% of all tumors. From a prognostic standpoint, this classification has really important implications. We know that neuroendocrine and basal squamous type tumors are the ones that have the worst prognosis, and luminal papillary tumors are the ones that have the best prognosis. Therefore, we hope that implementing this classification will assist in making decisions in patients with muscle-invasive bladder cancer.
Dr. Guerrero, how do you balance the efficacy and toxicity of neoadjuvant therapy?
Well, we all know since years ago that neoadjuvant chemotherapy gives the patient an overall survival benefit of 5 to 8% at 5 years. So neoadjuvant chemotherapy should be offered to all the patients who are undergoing a radical cystectomy due to a muscle-invasive bladder cancer. There are, however, some patients who are not candidates for neoadjuvant chemotherapy, especially if they are not cisplatin fit, patients who have some cardiac problems, or patients with impaired renal function or neurological or cardiac function. So if a patient is a candidate for neoadjuvant chemotherapy, these options should be offered as a part of the therapy, which will be subsequently followed by a radical cystectomy.
What is the best timing for surgery after neoadjuvant therapy?
Well, we have learned from previous studies that if you are not giving any therapy to the patient prior to radical cystectomy, this surgery shouldn't be delayed more than 90 days after performing the TURBT. And if there is a neoadjuvant therapy which should be offered to every patient who is fit for it before radical cystectomy, the timing will be given by the neoadjuvant chemotherapy. Usually, it's 3 to 4 cycles of chemotherapy with a disease assessment after the chemotherapy and prior to the radical cystectomy. So our oncologist will be in contact with us, with our patient being treated with systemic therapy, to calculate according to the last cycle of the treatment when we have to perform the radical cystectomy, but we shouldn't delay the radical cystectomy many weeks once the chemotherapy has been completed.
What is the role of surgery in bladder preservation?
Well, the standard of care for muscle-invasive bladder cancer is radical cystectomy with neoadjuvant chemo plus adjuvant chemo or immunotherapy. But certain selected patients or some of them refusing radical cystectomy are candidates for a bladder preservation strategy with trimodal therapy. This trimodal therapy includes both chemo and radiotherapy and a radical TURBT. The technique of this radical TURBT is very important, is of paramount importance in these patients, and it will impact the prognosis. So for these patients, we should do a TURBT of the exophytic tumor in several parts. First, we have to take the part, the most exophytic part of the tumor, and send it to the pathology department. Apart from it, we have to take the endophytic part of the tumor. Then we have to take a third part, which would be the tumor bed biopsy. And then with a cold cup forceps, we have to take a biopsy of the pervesical fat to rule out a C3A tumor invading the pervesical fat. Also in these patients, randomized biopsies with cold cup biopsies should be needed to rule out extensive CIS, which should be a contraindication for a trimodal therapy, and a prostatic urethra biopsy, which again could be a contraindication for trimodal therapy.
Dr. Carballo, what is the role of adjuvant radiotherapy or chemoradiation?
Adjuvant treatment is very important in those patients that after surgery have worse prognostic factors, as we can define PT3 with lymphovascular invasion, PT4 patients, or those patients who have lymph node positive after lymphadenectomy, or those with margins positive after surgery. So for those patients, we have demonstrated in several studies that adjuvant treatment is important because with one of those factors, the local relapse goes up to 33% of cases. When we compare radiation therapy alone with chemo radiation therapy, the results are much better in the combination of chemo radiation therapy. So we do must consider adjuvant treatment on those patients with more advanced risk factor after surgery.
How do you select patients for bladder preservation, and what is the optimal treatment strategy?
Bladder preservation is a strategy for those patients that obviously want to preserve the bladder, but we do must consider those patients that fit on that type of preservation protocol. So first of all, we need to look at patients with very good health. We also need to look at the renal function because those patients are going to receive cisplatin-based chemotherapy. Also, we need to look at the hydronephrosis because if they do have it, we need to, before to start the chemo radiation therapy treatment, we need to solve it. And also, when we look at the tumor, it is not mandatory, but probably we need to think about not including those big bulky diseases on the bladder, and also those patients with multi-center in situ disease. So for those candidates, this strategy with chemo and radiation therapy is optimal. We may propose to those patients two types of treatments. One will be with chemo radiation therapy, but in a more conventional fashion, that is 6 or 7 weeks of treatment, because we are given 2 grays per day fraction of radiation therapy. So the whole treatment will be long for a total of 7 weeks with cisplatin-based chemotherapy. And a second schedule could be with a shorter radiation therapy, because we are given 2.75 grays by day. So we short from 7 weeks to 4 weeks. And on these cases, the protocols were combining this radiation therapy, hypofractionated radiation therapy, with 5-FU and mitomycin C. So in both cases, the most important thing was the or issue was the grade 3 and 4 late toxicity. Then when we look at this 5 years long-term grade 3 and 4 toxicity, for those cases, for those scenarios, toxicity was on terms of gastrointestinal less than 2% and on the genitourinary less than 5%. Because right now we are given radiation therapy with more sophisticated techniques like IMRT and VMAT that preserve toxicity and increase results.
Is there any potential for immunotherapy to enhance the outcomes of radiotherapy in localized disease?
Yes, there is a potential combination for radiation therapy and immunocheckpoint inhibitors because we have learned from other diseases that the mechanisms of radiotherapy when we do deliver radiation therapy to a tumor is multifactorial. For example, we increase with radiation therapy the PD-L1 expression. We also increase and release to the bloodstream pro-inflammatory stress proteins, also increase the antigen expression and also immune cells inflammation and infiltration. So for all these reasons, the radiation therapy is a treatment that may enhance the potential role on immunotherapy on those patients.
Dr. Grande, how do you select patients for neoadjuvant or adjuvant therapy?
For the treatment of our patients with muscle-invasive bladder cancer that are candidates to receive neoadjuvant or adjuvant, we are following the Galski criteria because the standard backbone for this perioperative treatment are based on cisplatin. No matter if you use dosdenzenbac or cisplatin gemcitabine, you need to follow this criteria. The thing is, all of these patients are fit enough to receive dosdenzenbac. How much growing supportive factor like G-CSF are needed before the use of this neoadjuvant approach? Well, that's the question that we do in the clinic.
What about the role of immunotherapy as adjuvant therapy for high-risk muscle-invasive bladder cancer?
In the adjuvant treatment, the use of cisplatin and gemcitabine as an adjuvant treatment is something that it is well established if the patients did not receive neoadjuvant approach and they were operated through a cystectomy upfront. This is not the ideal scenario, but we have robust evidence and meta-analysis showing an overall improvement in the survival in the range of the 6% of the overall survival of our patients. Ideally, patients should be treated with neoadjuvant approach based on cisplatin before the surgery. By doing that, the meta-analysis is suggesting an improvement in the overall survival of these patients of the 8%. Consistently, all the major guidelines, European Association of Urology guidelines, ESMO guidelines, NCCN guidelines, are consistently recommending the use of cisplatin as a neoadjuvant approach ahead of the use of adjuvant treatment after upfront cystectomy to the patients.
Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for next week's podcasts as we discuss the frequently asked questions for first-line treatment decision-making.